Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 162. We're back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 3, episodes 11, Gingerbread, and 12, Helpless. My name is Selena. I'm back. This is amazing. I made the wish last week when we were talking about the wish that I would be on to talk about Helpless, and here we are. It's a miracle. Although now I'm sad I won't be on next week, so every wish comes with a price, I guess, is the message. And I have two newbies with me today. So I have Brittany and I have Danielle. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And as you so astutely pointed out, that I count for two superfans, so we're fine.
We're having a rough time gathering the troops this week.
Yes, we do. There's a lot of traveling. It's summer. There's a lot going on. So we'll do the best we can, and hopefully our discussion will be satisfactory. Before we get into the episode, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. If you want to leave feedback on this episode or on like spoiler-free stuff about Buffy in general, you can contact us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com in the podcast section. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So we hope to hear from you. But remember, no spoilers. I have already pissed off a couple of people on Twitter because they like tweeted something at me and Rewatchable that's like vaguely like the most vague spoiler you can imagine. And I'm just like, shh, don't give anything away. But yeah, feel free to do that. And before we get into talking about Gingerbread, we want to start with fun facts so you can distinguish our voices. Only three of us today, but that's still always good. So let's start with our newbie, Danielle.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's see. Oh, yesterday, I don't know how to say this. I rescued two dogs and made sure that they got home safely.
I saw that on Twitter. How did that turn out?
I had an adventure yesterday. It turned out really well. There was a dog that like ran across the yards across the street from me. And so I used my dog to entice that dog to like stop and come say hello so I could grab it. And then down the street, there was another girl who found this other dog. And the two of us, who were total strangers, ended up walking around the neighborhood trying to see if we could find people looking for the dogs. And they were related because the dogs knew each other and like didn't want to be apart after that. So then I ended up taking both of them and sitting out on my front lawn, just like looking for people. They didn't come. So I called the police and our friendly police officer came, picked them up. They were microchipped, so they found out that they lived a few streets over and they brought them home. And apparently the person didn't know that they had gotten out. They were cleaning the house and had no idea that their dogs were gone for like 2 hours. So,
oh my gosh.
So everything.
So you might see them again. Okay. Yeah. That's great. That's good. You're such a good Samaritan. That's amazing.
Wow, it's my Saturday adventure. I was sad to give them up. They were super sweet.
What is your fun fact, Brittany? Can you beat that?
No, because it didn't happen yet. But my fun fact was that I'm going to see Shonda Rhimes talk this afternoon, and I'm kind of excited.
Oh my God, that's amazing. What is that for?
Vulture's having a TV festival this week in New York, and this is one of the programming events that you could buy individual tickets for. So I'm going to go see her give a talk.
Ah, so cool. Mm-hmm. I saw this thing. Yeah. Like she did once, like it was this speech on like how like while everyone else were like not to like this is gonna sound awful because that's kind of what you're doing, but like everyone else were like going to like seminars and reading inspiration and stuff, and all the while she was just sitting in her room working on her script, and now she's here, and it's like yeah, just get stuff done. It was basically the message, and I felt so like a failure. But in a good way, because I was like, oh, yeah, you should just sit down and write. So she's
I'll
awesome.
I'll get stuff done after I see Shonda Rhimes tell me to
exactly.
go get stuff done.
Exactly.
That's the push I need.
That's the dream. Yeah. That's so cool. I have, like, absolutely nothing to even compete with your fun facts, but I will say that there's a Copenhagen marathon today, so like everyone in Copenhagen are like out running, so I just went to the gym and I just got back like 5 minutes before we started, just so I'd feel a little bit less like a failure in that regard at least. So now I'm like exhausted and probably gonna fall asleep midway through, so that's my fun fact. Not so fun But it doesn't matter because we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about Buffy. And our first episode is the 10th episode of season 3, which is Ginger Bread. Not my favorite, I will say. Helpless certainly makes up for it, but we'll get into the discussion of that, I guess. But before we do, the short synopsis. Whoever wrote this, clearly it wasn't their favorite either, because compared to the other synopsis, it's like 3 lines. So it says, in this episode, Hansel and Gretel take over the town when they convince mothers everywhere to literally burn the witch. Everything is fine when Cordy saves the day again and Amy turns into a rat. That's it. That's the episode. Thoughts? Impressions? Yeah.
I was kind of into it for a little bit only because I like when they give Joyce something to do that's not just like being a worried mother, but like where she's like in the action and, you know, she's like placed against Buffy kind of. And I don't know. I thought it was just refreshing to see her doing something a little different, even though she was brainwashed, which I didn't quite get at first. And I was like, why is she so involved? Like,
why is she literally the worst?
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I was so upset watching it first because I'm like, oh, I have to sit through this and Joyce is just being awful. And why isn't she just like arguing with Buffy about college anymore? Like, why is this her cause? And I was like, oh, actually, this is okay. She's involved in something and Buffy's going to have to stop her. And then she's going to try to burn her daughter alive. So I'm into it.
Just that little thing. Yeah. What do you think, Danielle?
I thought it was weird. Like, that's the best way to describe my viewing of this episode. It was fine, but it didn't feel like I was watching an episode of Buffy. I don't know how else to explain it. It was just like all of these strange things were happening with characters, like weird things are coming out about Willow, and we saw Willow's mom. And even though Buffy's mom was like brainwashed, her actions were still so strange. There was just a lot of different sort of things going on that it just made the episode feel not like a Buffy episode for me.
That's a really good point, because I think I feel the same way. Like, Gingerbread is one of those that I will sometimes skip on rewatches because, like, there are a few, like, most of the time I sort of praise Buffy for the fact that nothing that happens goes unaddressed. Like, everything that happens to these characters comes back. But in Gingerbread, it almost, you know, it's like that episode Killed by Death last season, like, when she was at the hospital. It feels a little too removed, a little too monster of the week, a little too, like, it wants to be a procedural rather than a serialized show, you know? And I'm not as into it when it tries to do that. I will say there's a couple of things that I love about this episode, but there are few and far between. And also, like, I know you guys, like, most people on this podcast, like, officially hate Joyce. And I don't. But in this episode, I hate Joyce. And even though I know she's brainwashed, I still hate Joyce and I hate everything she does.
Yeah.
And it almost doesn't, I know that's unfair, but it almost doesn't make it okay that she's brainwashed because it's still her saying all these things. And when she goes on that spiel about like, it belongs to the monsters and the witches and the slayers, I'm just like, how dare you? You know?
Well, I think that kind of comes out of the fact that, at least for me, I don't love Joyce. I don't necessarily hate her, but there's nothing to me that is like, she is this person and being brainwashed and the thing she's doing now is so completely out of the ordinary for her character, because for a lot of the time she is against a lot of the things that Buffy does, maybe not as like actively as she is in this episode, but it's not, her brainwashing is not a huge jump from where her character normally is.
If you remember that episode Ted, when like her boyfriend was a robot and she was so quick to turn against Buffy. And I know she was brainwashed there too, but the fact that it's so close to how she usually is probably does like say a lot. Like we never really know. Joyce is used as an antagonist quite a lot. And I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting that they do that with her.
Yeah. And every time she is brainwashed, like you were just saying, they believe it because no one doubts that Joyce can get to that place that quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think, honestly, I think I just like Joyce because she's Buffy's mom, like, because Buffy likes her. I'm like, oh, Joyce, you know, she has her mom, and that's really nice. But no, and it's also, like, that thing of I just watched the 100 finale this week, and in that episode, the main character, Clark, was, like, her mom was tortured, no, was brainwashed. And she was tortured by her mother, and then she, like, had to watch her mother die, and she couldn't do anything to stop it. And then they got out of the brainwash, and they had that huge emotional moment of like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that to you. And that never comes here. And I feel like that needed to happen, and it doesn't. And it's so weird. Like, they just move on.
No, that's a great point. I actually just watched that a few days ago. And yeah, that really needed to come in this, like some sort of I'm sorry moment, but it feels like, and I think we get to it in a little bit, but like everybody just forgets that it happens and we just move on.
Yeah.
Like, that's, it's like, no, you didn't just try to burn me. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. That's a little weird. But, you know, I mean, there is, before the whole brainwashing thing, Joyce, like, who made this doc? Was it you, Brandy?
Oh, no, it was Ariana.
Ariana, yes, she does make a point that Joyce is sort of adorable, you know, the Slayer version of a soccer mom. She brings snacks to slaying, even though it's really, like, not responsible. It's nice that she wants to be involved, you know? I do think that's interesting. Also, compared to, like, other teen shows where the parents just kind of leave their kids to it, you know? Like, Joyce is actively involved, even though it's super annoying and a problem for Buffy.
She tries to take an interest, sort of.
Yeah. And then there's also a point here too that Buffy often feels like the mother part of the mother-daughter relationship, especially after they see the kids, and it's Buffy that has to keep like Joyce in check, and she can't freak out in front of her mom. She has to wait until she's talking to Giles. Just watching Gilmore Girls right now, that's also a funny parallel. I don't know, I doubt that it was intentional, but it was kind of funny. Anything else to say about Joyce?
Well, can we jump ahead to talk about Giles and Joyce while we're on that page? Because I loved every second of that. I forgot about it, actually, until I just read the show note. And when they're together, they're like, it's been a while. It's been since, you know, and they like can't make eye contact. And it's so cute.
I know. How do you guys feel? And also Ariana as well. Like, how do you guys feel about the fallout from that? Because that's another thing. The show doesn't just let it go.
I love it. You know? Because I was thinking that it would just be like, oh, that was like a time where we were all like crazy. Like, let's just forget about it. And they don't. And I love it because like, these are the two people that like Buffy needs to be on the same page with. And like, she can't have them together ever because they're like, oh, I'm sorry. I won't look at you. I know. I'm so sorry.
That they actively avoid each other. I don't remember what episode it was, but I think Buffy was asking her mom if like Giles could come over or something like that. And her mom's like, no.
Yeah. So
like they just actively. Yeah. Yes. That's what it was. They just actively avoid each other. And it's really nice to see like that episode had some sort of ramification on something, that it wasn't just a bottle episode.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That is, there are a couple of things in this episode that make it, or you meant the other one. Yeah. That it comes back. I do like that. I do enjoy that a lot. I think the Joyce and Giles awkwardness is one of my favorite things. But we also meet another mom. We meet Willow's mom, Sheila, who is like the actual worst. I also think that's like, in a way, makes me dislike Joyce in this episode more, because it's like Joyce and Sheila. And Sheila is clearly the worst. Like, even before she got brainwashed, Willow describes her as this mom who's just never around. She's like the evil academic, which I have to say, my mother's an academic. We watched this show at some point like a couple of years ago, and she was so mad that they like made the academic be the villain.
Yeah, she reminded me of, I caught up on the last few episodes of The Big Bang Theory, and she just reminds me of Leonard's mom, where like it's a very clinical relationship. It's like, okay, you're going to tell me something and I'm going to analyze that as you're saying it to me. Like it was very like cold, and like even their staging of like the scenes, like they're sitting far apart. They're like looking at each other, sitting upright, like they're not relaxed at all. Like you could just tell that Willow is not like her mother.
And how did you feel about getting an insight into Willow's home life? Because this is really the first we've seen of that.
I was surprised because I didn't ever realize that we didn't get it. Like, I never mm-hmm. realized that that was something that we were missing, that, like, we had never met her mother. Because I feel like she's been hinted to or something, like,
yeah.
When Willow goes to cover for Buffy sometimes, it's like, oh, Buffy's coming over and whatever. And I feel like that in my mind was enough. So when we got to this, I was like, oh, no, we actually haven't, like, dove in. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting to see how different Willow's mom is. And it kind of gives an insight as to why Willow is the way she is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I also, what I really enjoy is that over the past couple of episodes, we've really had some insight into both Willow and Xander's home life, that they've set it up since season one, but this is the first time we really begin to understand what their lives are like at home. And you get such a better sense of, first of all, why the two of them have always sort of stuck together, and why now that Buffy is there, they're so willing and able to enter into this little makeshift family and spend so much time at the library and go out and save the world, and they don't have anything to come home to. Which is kind of sad, but it's also kind of nice for the sake of the Scoobies, you know?
Yeah, it does explain, like, it makes the world make, as much as this world does not make sense, it makes it make a little bit more sense. Like, why would these kids choose to hang out in the library? Oh, because when they go home, it's not that great.
And it also puts into contrast Joyce, like, she actually cares. Mm-hmm. Even though, as much as bad as we might think she is, she actually goes with her. She actually cares where her daughter goes, and she actually wants to be a part of it, you know? That is kind of nice. I can't hate her. I'm sorry. I think she just tries so hard. But it also brings up an interesting question, this fact that when they finally do take an interest, or when Willow's mom takes an interest, it is in this really, really negative way. And basically, once again, the adults become the problem for the kids, because they take a stand, you know, mothers against the occult. They basically try to shut the whole thing down and take Sunnydale back from the demons. And I don't know what kind of reaction you guys had to that. I thought it was a really interesting twist, because I don't think we ever expected the adults to be so aware, because they are aware. Even if they were possessed, they are clearly aware that something's going on.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that at the end of the episode, like, Willow's mom still, like, remembered things. I was kind of half expecting the whole thing to be like, oh, they were brainwashed and now they don't remember anything at all of, like, what they said. But Willow's mom, like, retained some of that information. So I think it's interesting to have all of these people now sort of kind of in the know, but in denial of being in the know. And just how far they were willing to go, and if that is affecting how much they're allowing themselves to believe. Because, you know, if they kind of remember, and you remember almost burning your daughter at the stake, you know, maybe you're just going to give them a little bit more leeway into whatever it is you think they're into.
Yeah, one would hope. Yeah.
That's a good point. Sorry, go ahead.
No, okay, I was just going to ask, like, go on from that, because Ariana does ask, like, even until they go crazy and try to burn their children, which is obviously awful, if Joyce has this big speech where she basically interrupts or contradicts the mayor, who is there as well, trying to calm everything down, she's like, actually, she breaks the unspoken, like, we don't talk about Fight Club, we don't talk about vampires rule, and she addresses it, and all the adults are like, yeah, we know, finally someone's saying it aloud. And she basically makes this play to, let's stop just letting the slayers and the witches and the vampires and the demons fight it out amongst themselves. Let's actively take our town back. And Ariana asks, does she have a point? You know, because Buffy is just one girl, and she's just kind of reacting to evil as it rises. Should they actually be doing something like this? Or could they?
Yeah, this is a question, like, I've kind of had in the back of my mind since the beginning of Buffy. Like, the Watcher Council clearly knows that this is a problem. Why isn't there, like, a tribe of people who are trained to, like, guard the Hellmouth or something, and just, like, be the Slayer's assistant, sort of like when Buffy ran away and you had the Scooby gang with their walkie-talkies and their stakes, you know, like, they were that kind of, you know, tribe. And yeah, they do help every now and then, but they're not trained to. I just think it's not enough. So I think that Joyce did have a point there. where, like, yes, you are the chosen one. You are the one who is supposed to do all of this. But can't we have some, like, vampire preparedness kits in our, like, you know, homes? So, like, if we're leaving at night, we can take a backpack with us, and it has some holy water and a wooden stake and, you know, head off to the bronze.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I won't say that the show doesn't address that in the future in various ways. Like, there definitely is a question of like you know, like Joyce was saying, like, why don't we, you know, try to do something about it? But I also think it is like the Star Wars thing, or the Harry Potter thing. Like, well, the Harry Potter thing more of like, yeah, we could just tell the world about witches, we could just tell the world about vampires, but that would just lead to outright chaos and confusion and open war, and we don't want that. And the Star Wars thing is that there always has to be a balance to the Force, you know, like there has to be a balance of good and evil. Buffy is kind of the Slayer, is kind of the Force of good, and she's not necessarily like, I don't know, the, you know, like she, but she's the one to counteract the vampire. She's the one who has to fight to save the world. But the forces of whatever maybe sort of has to keep a balance. Like, I don't know, I'm just imagining it's kind of like midichlorians, you know. You know, they make a Slayer like they made Anakin Skywalker. I don't know.
I'm sorry, I got lost.
Probably not like that.
I got lost thinking of the British Prime Minister acting as the mayor of this town, like knowing what's going on, but then being like, no, I did, the bridge was not constructed well, sorry.
Like, it was really windy.
Yeah, where he's like, there's a gas leak. You
know? Right, right. But no, I do think there, it is a good question. Like, when they've set up this whole world hinges on the fact that there's one girl in all the world to fight the vampires. But once you have that, it's like, okay, but why aren't there 10 girls? Or why aren't they, why don't they just tell everyone about vampires? Or why don't they just whatever, you know? And I think the show does a fairly good job of asking those questions. But I also think when you're in a world like this, you kind of have to roll with it. Like, you know, Wizarding World and Harry Potter having to be kept a secret.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Daniel.
Nope, you go first.
I'm not for, like, telling the world that there are vampires. I'm for, like, the council enacting, like, like, you know, the Order of the Phoenix type thing, you know, where they have, right, like, a special group of people who are trained to handle just, like, random outbreaks, or, like, you know, take shifts in the graveyard. So it's not all on Buffy. Like, yes, Buffy is the one that you call in, like, she'll be the first one there. She's the Harry Potter. She has to be the one to kill the master and, you know, destroy the guard and do all of that stuff. But, you know, maybe she can also have some help.
Okay, but in that analogy, I like that, because I think we sort of already kind of, and we'll talk about the Watchers Council obviously in the next episode, but
awful.
But if we use that as the analogy for the Ministry of Magic, and we use Giles as the Dumbledore and the Scoobies as the Order of the Phoenix, then that still kind of works.
Oh my goodness.
Because that's kind of what's happening here.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, J.K. Rowling, I'm going to prove she ripped off the show somehow.
Well, I think that the Scoobies are more the Ron and Hermione's, though, because, and like, they're more Dumbledore's army, not Order of the Phoenix. Okay, Order of the Phoenix is more professional. They're very highly trained and whatever. But, you know, you have like a Neville thrown in the Dumbledore's army who, like, can prove himself in the moment, but, you know, they're not, they're just sort of on the outskirts being tossed into this world. Like, they're getting some training from Giles because they're all together in school and they're researching and watching Buffy and stuff like that, but they're not, like, more of an official capacity type thing where they're like, I hate to say adults, because I don't think necessarily that they need to be adults, as this show has shown us. We definitely don't need adults to handle these problems.
Basically, they're the worst.
Yeah. But I think that they need just something a little higher than the Scooby Gang, like a little more official.
That's a good point. I think, well, anyway, we'll get back to the Watchers Council. We don't need to spend a lot of time on Gingerbread anyway. So just to sort of a final couple of points here. Obviously, the story here is fairy tales. It's a fairy tale. Hansel and Gretel that is proven to be a part of this world. I really think, you know, this is very sort of, the shows do that a lot nowadays. Like Grimm and Once Upon a Time are obviously like hinging on it, and I think like Buffy bringing it into the world was kind of unique at the time, but now it's just kind of like, ugh. another Hansel and Gretel story. What else do we talk about? Cordy was awesome. That was amazing. I think you guys have some have her in your scenes.
I actually forgot about the I feel like the Hansel and Gretel thing got lost in this episode. Like, I know what they were trying to do, but I forgot about it until the end, basically. Like, right, there were two children when they were trying to figure out, like, what were their names and stuff. And I thought that that was interesting, like, that reveal of the fact that everyone was brainwashed, being like, did anyone ever actually get their names? Like, I thought that was really clever because I wasn't paying attention to that detail at all.
Yeah, I wasn't either. And I liked the fact that, like, they pointed out nobody knows who these kids are. Like, nobody came forward. Which I really liked that. There was just a weird shift towards the end where I wasn't sure what was going on when they turned into, like, one person. And I still don't understand, like, how the parents became brainwashed. It was just by, like, being near the children. So, like, that was kind of weird. But I liked the first premise of it where they started poking holes into what we thought we knew about everything and, like, realizing that we hadn't really dug into a lot of it.
Yeah, and some horrible imagery too. I was thinking, like, both the dead children, which is obviously, like, making it so real, this world, like, oh my god, children die, and then, like, the monster merging. I always thought that was so disgusting, into that giant one, and Willow and Buffy on the stakes being burned. How awful. I always, that scene, it's so raw, and that's why I'm so disappointed there isn't a follow-up where Joyce is like, oh my god, I can't believe I almost did that to you, because seeing them, literally, Willow was on fire, you know? Like, they could have been burned alive right there. I just think that was horrible. Yeah. I also have a problem with scenes of people being burned alive on TV. Game of Thrones.
I was not comfortable with that either.
No.
I was like, this is, like, not my favorite maybe thing. One step no. too far.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very dark. And obviously, the next episode is, like, 10 times as dark. But I did think the show got very dark there. And I think I will say next episode, I feel like they earned it a lot more than they did this one. But still, I mean, some good points that we'll get into in favorite scenes. Our final point in the doc that Ariana notes, Amy turns into a rat. This will probably have deep ramifications in the season finale or something. Any thoughts on that? Willow couldn't turn her back?
I mean, Willow just needs a little bit more training. Amy will come back. It'll be fine. She has some cheese. Okay, good. She gets a wheel.
Yeah, that's true. She's fine.
She got a wheel.
Yeah.
She'll be really fit when she comes back.
That's true. Just rounding off the discussion of Gingerbread with our favorite scenes. Danielle, what was yours? This was secretly also mine.
My favorite scene was Oz and Xander crawling through the school's air vents in order to try to save their friends, which is great. But I love that they only came crashing through the ceiling after Giles and Cordelia had already saved everybody. Like, that moment of them being on the ground, looking up and seeing, like, nothing was going on. And they're just like, we were here to save you.
Oh, my God. I love it.
It was really great.
And it's so true to form, like Buffy form. You know, these are our Oz and Xander are pretty much the least heroic characters on the show. And also it was a nice way to reunite them, because up until that point, like, the two of them are still very much, there's so much tension between them, obviously, especially from Xander's point, because Oz is pretty chill about it, but Xander is so hyper aware of the fact that what he and Willow did. Yeah. And I guess, like, falling through the ceiling and trying to save the day is kind of a bonding exercise for them.
So they should do it more often.
Yeah. it was so good. And Brittany, what about you?
I realize as the way I typed it in here, it looks horrible because I said Joyce and the other mothers lighting their children on fire. I have a very specific moment from when they're lighting their children on fire that was hilarious. And it's when Joyce, like, looks at Willow's mom and she's like, you know, we should really hang out after, like, you know, we should keep in touch after we're done lighting our children on fire. And I was like, wow, they really are brainwashed.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Also a very, very good sort of harrowing moment there. And my favorite scene was actually, just because we didn't really talk about it in the doc, Angel and Buffy meeting up and talking about basically about what's going on. You know, she sort of touches base with him and tells him that it was pretty awful what happened. And he's like, you know, I don't even remember. I just remember it's sort of impactful. They have a couple of good talks in these episodes, I think. And I just realized as I typed him meeting her for the first time. I'm pretty sure that happens in Helpless, so just forget I didn't write that. And
no, I understand how you mix them up. Like, they're great talks, mm-hmm. but I can't pick them out. Like, they're not very distinct. Mm-hmm. But they are really good. I do like all of them.
It's nice to see them sort of just having quiet moments together, and him sort of helping to calm her down, because she's clearly very upset about the kids too, even though she can't show it. And as far as my favorite lines go, Danielle?
So mine is between Willow and her mom. And her mom says, "Willow, you cut off your hair. That's a new look." And Willow goes, "Yeah, it's just a sudden whim I had in August."
Yeah, poor Willow.
Like, really? You don't notice a haircut? Like,
And what about you, Brittany?
Mine was Giles speaking to the computer. And he said, "Session interrupted. Who said you can interrupt, you stupid, useless fad? No, I said fad, and I'll say it again."
Yeah, Giles's battle with the computer is like one of my favorite like ongoing things. It's so funny.
It's so funny. It's almost like old man yelling at cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah. And I have a couple of lines from Cordelia, just because like she was so awesome this week, and she proves, I think, that she's better just doing her own thing, and that she basically doesn't need Xander, of course, to be awesome. And she has, first of all, these are both from the scene when she goes to the library and finds Giles knocked out. And she says, "I came over here to tell Buffy to stop this craziness and found you all unconscious again. How many times have you been knocked out anyway? I swear one of these times you're going to wake up in a coma."
I really love Giles's follow up to that, where he's like, "Wake up in a coma." Ah, forget it.
Yeah, that's the best part.
I know, and it's so funny because it's so meta. Because yeah, Giles does get knocked out more than like anyone else on TV in the history of time. So that's a pretty funny acknowledgement of that. And then plus, like in the same scene, he goes, "We need to save Buffy from Hansel and Gretel." And Cordelia's like, "Now let's be clear: the brain damage happened before I hit you." Oh, so funny. I love Cordelia.
He must have some sort of brain damage, though, from being knocked out that many times.
I know. I know. That's like, even with vampires and hellmouths and stuff, that's the least realistic thing about the show, is how many times Giles is knocked unconscious. So moving on now to Helpless, which I am much more excited about talking about, because this episode is very, very good. Very, very scary, but I think very, very strong, and one of my favorite episodes of the season, actually. Before we get into talking about it, let's read the longer synopsis. I think this indicates that Ariana likes it more too, but we'll see. In this episode, Giles betrays us all because Buffy just wants him to join her for some birthday daddy-daughter bonding time at the Ice Capades, but he can't because he's too busy literally injecting poison into his mentee's body. Buffy is down for the count and drowning in him. Oh, I missed it. I missed my cue. But Giles has never been the type to try and grab the spotlight. So when the vamp makes his way across the room. Wow, this is all the lyrics to Hamilton. Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what's going on?
Yeah, it's all Hamilton lyrics.
So okay.
Giles has never been the type to try and grab the spotlight, so when the vamp makes his way across the room, Buffy got nervous, thinking, what's she gonna do? The vamp grabbed her by the arm, and she was thinking, I'm through, because when he looked back at her, suddenly she was helpless. Oh, look at those eyes. Giles tries to apologize. Does someone else want to do this? I feel like I'm not doing it justice. This is a masterpiece.
No, you are doing it justice.
I can't help you. I've never listened or done anything with Hamilton. So.
Okay. Giles tries to apologize, like, I'm so into you. I'm so into you. But Buffy just wanted to know, where are you taking me? And he couldn't tell her. He was about to change her life. So the Watchers are like, hey, Giles, thank you for your service. And Buffy caps it off with, it took fighting a war for us to meet, and you just proved it wasn't worth it. I've been dying inside as you whine and dine, and I'm trying not to cry because there's nothing your mind can't do. All you had was your honor, me, my tolerance for pain. Giles backtracks. No stress, Buffy. My love for you was never in doubt. We'll go to the Icecapades and we'll figure it out. I've been living without a family since my disposition is mild. The other watchers suck, so I left. I grew buck wild, but I'll never forget my mother's face. Buffy cries, that was real. And as long as I'm alive, Giles, I swear to God, that's a wound that'll never heal. I do, I do, I do.
Oh my God. Ariana just should win this Pulitzer.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That was just brilliant. I don't even, I wish I knew the song well enough to have sung all that, but I'm sure the listeners
It got to be a little bit of a mashup later. So it's okay.
Yes.
I wish I knew the song at all.
I know.
When I first saw the doc, I was like, what is going on here? So that makes a lot more sense.
Oh my gosh. I just like, I'm not a huge, like I have only listened to the thing all the way through once, but Helpless is definitely one of my favorite. And now it's just ruined the title of this episode for me because every time I'm like, she is helpless. And then I just, oh, thanks Ariana for that masterpiece. If you want to do like a version of it for next week, we should totally do that because it's worth it. Anyway, this is actually, aside from lending itself to a beautiful Hamilton parody, I said before that I think this episode is fantastic, and I think it's very, very emotional, and it's very brave, I think, for the show to go there with Giles and Buffy's relationship like that, because it has sort of been the constant so far, and to make Giles, even the antagonist, even for a second, I think is, says a lot to their belief in the strength of his character, because, you know, as I'm sure Brittany agrees, and we'll find out if Danielle, you do too, like Giles is not a bad guy. Like we still are on 100% on Giles' side, especially after what happens at the end of the episode. But I really think this is a good episode. What do you guys think?
I thought it was great.
I was gonna like, I'm letting Danielle go first. I have a lot.
Yeah, I'll have my say, and then you can go in. I thought it was great. And I agree with you that it was really a testament to his character, because when you first get the reveal that like he's behind it, yeah, he was acting weird before it, but then you get the reveal and you're like, oh my God, is everything that I know a lie? Like I love Giles. How could this happen? But then once things start getting explained, you almost, or well, not even almost, like I understood why Giles had to do what he did, even though it was really not great and not a great practice by any means. But you get to be so conflicted, and I think it's episodes or situations where you feel like you're on both sides of a fence that really make for like something interesting, because you find out more about like, wait, how do I think about this? Like, what does that mean about me? What does that mean about the show? So I really like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love when shows play in this like moral gray area, because like Danielle brought up, which I think is a really great point, you look at it from Buffy's side and you're like, no, you have to be angry, because what did the Watchers Council ever like really give to Giles that would make him trust them that much? They don't invite him kayaking. Like, why would you then go along with this like Slayer test? Like, yes, it's protocol and stuff like that, but then you see the other side where the Watchers Council is like, you know, they take Giles away from Buffy because he does have this bond with her. And that is sort of a problem, because like they're saying, like he doesn't have that distance that is needed of a Watcher. Like, you know, where, oh my gosh, what's her name? The
Kendra?
Other
Faith?
Yes, Kendra. Where she was able to, like, her watcher was like, okay, you must go now. Like, I feel like Giles would be like, okay, I'm packing my bag and I'm coming with you.
Yeah.
Like, but Kendra had that distance, and she was trained well, and she knew, like, okay, this is my job, and my watcher who is in charge of me is telling me what to do. Whereas Giles doesn't sort of, like, he doesn't have that distance with Buffy, because he does care for her in a fatherly way, which killed me when Buffy was, like, asking him to go. To, like trying to ask him to go, and he was being so distant, and I thought that something like we had in the last episode, I'm like, oh, we're dealing with like, you know, something's wrong with Giles, like, and I sort of like took myself out of the episode because I'm like, it'll be something weird, like he's possessed or something, and you know, that's why he's acting like this. And when it wasn't, it hurt even more, because you're like, no, you were doing this consciously. Like, you were actively trying to distance yourself from Buffy in that way by, like, basically shutting down. and not listening to what she's saying while you like try to test her on these crystals and stuff. And then, you know, just going with blind faith in the council who, you know, they haven't proven anything to us up until this point. So it hurts more as a viewer being like, why would you side with them when we don't know anything about this council?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all good points. I think it's so clear, especially because right at the end, like Giles starts out following tradition. Like he clearly hates doing it, but he does it because that's what's been done for Slayers for, you know, however long there's been Slayers, and he is not just gonna break with the tradition, but obviously as soon as he sees what Buffy's going through, he breaks with it and they let him go for it. And I think there is no question that the real enemy or the real wrong party here is the Watchers Council. It's not Giles. It's the Watchers Council that has been doing this to Slayers and their Watchers. They're the reason that the Slayers and the Watchers are supposed to have that separate relationship. If you look at, I'm going to say if you look at past Slayers, you don't because you've only seen one. But, you know, Kendra had that relationship to a Watcher. She was trained to be a fighter. She was kept from, they made a point to say she was kept from her human side. And she was a Slayer for less than a year and she died. And a lot of Slayers have, we saw as well Buffy in the Wishverse without her Watcher being close to her and without friends. That's what she was like as well. That's kind of what Faith is like as well. That's that cold, cold attitude towards Slayers as disposable warriors is not something that Giles is here for. And it's not something that Buffy is here for. And I think that's sort of how they dealt with that and how they showed that in this episode is very important. And I mean, if it's not clear already, I think it's safe to say that the Watchers Council is the patriarchy. You know, the Watchers Council is the stuffy old men who control these girls. And the way they were set up as the bad guy in this episode and the way Giles was set up as breaking with them, I think says a lot about the show's message and about Giles and about what kind of a Slayer Buffy is. And I think it's all very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I think Buffy recognizes right before she even finds out that, you know, Giles has been doing this to her, that she does need him. Like, as much as she, like, pokes fun at him and, like, oh, your stuffy books and, like, whatnot and you're training me, like, you're clearly not up to snuff to, like, be battling me physically. Like, when she, like, is fighting Angel, it's a different story. Like, you see her struggling a bit, whereas if when she's fighting Giles, she pushes him over a table and it's, like, over. And, you know, but she will always go to Giles. Like, she has that comfort and trust in him. And I think that breaking that trust, or at least not fully breaking it, because I think at the end of the episode she sort of sees a little bit more of what's going on, but damaging that trust and having to then pick up from here with someone else presumably coming in, because I don't know, I didn't watch the next episode, with someone else coming in and having that contrast, like, you know, it's going to be an interesting area for the show to play in, and I'm kind of excited about it because, like they were saying at the end of this episode, well, Giles is still the librarian. He's still there. So there's going to be some conflict of, well, Buffy's clearly not going to trust this Watcher. Like, you know, she's going to still probably try and go to Giles. And I'm really interested to see how their relationship changes. I hope it changes. It should. This was a big deal. And to see what it's like going forward. Because you had this just made me think of Faith when she just like kind of blindly trusted that woman from the council being like, oh, you're my new Watcher. And like Giles was looking at her like, this is ridiculous. And Buffy was like, can we kill her? Like stuff like that because of how different they were. And I think that in that moment, everyone in the group recognized that that is how Watchers are supposed to be. And they were like, oh, thank God we have Giles because we would not be able to deal with that. But Faith ran to it because she doesn't have this relationship with people. She's just like, well, I'm a Slayer. That's my calling. I'm going to, and it makes sense for me to go with this like rigid type of person. So it's really, I like what they're doing with Watchers. I think it's making the show a lot more interesting for me as a viewer.
Yeah, same. Like, absolutely same. Because that's the thing I love about this episode too, is that it genuinely dares to take that leap, and it dares to follow character over status quo, basically. Because, like, Giles, obviously, this is season three, right? Middle of season three. We've set Giles up to be the Watcher. We've already seen him expanded from his original role in the pilot of actually being the type of Watcher that might just do what he was required to do and help in this episode without breaking. But we've seen him grow from that. We've seen him grow closer to Buffy. We've seen him embrace the fact that she wants to have friends and be a normal girl. We've seen, obviously, pieces of his past. We found out that he never really wanted to be a Watcher. And then we come to this point, and he makes the decision, and he has to face the consequences for it. Like, the Watchers' Council actually fired. Like, Giles is no longer a Watcher, where, as I said, halfway through season three, and Giles just lost his raison d'être on the show. And I think that's so cool that they did that, you know?
Yeah, I think most shows would be afraid to go there that early, or at least, like, in the middle of a season, you know what I mean?
In the middle, like, yeah, just, yeah, like a season, not a season finale, not a, like, no one was dying. It was just like, okay, this, now he's fired.
Yeah, and it, and like we saw with Band Candy, like, it, this is something small and trivial with Joyce and Giles' relationship, like, playing out. There's that little kernel of this episode that's probably going to be, I don't know, this is a newbie guess, that's probably going to be planted throughout the rest of this season, maybe into future seasons, just because it was such a big moment. And sort of like, all right, a bigger moment to compare to would be Jenny. Like, you know, we keep having that little seed planted with Giles's distrust of Angel, like when he invites him in and he gets the crossbow. Like, there's those little nuggets, and the show has not proven to me otherwise that it's not capable of doing this. So I'm looking forward to, like, the payoff of this being mid-season and carrying on through the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. And I've said that before. Oh, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I also like the fact that they're kind of doing a switch with Giles' character, because before he's the Watcher. Like, that's kind of who he is. And so now with things that have happened before, and now that he is no longer the Watcher, you realize that, like, he is human. Like, he's just human. Now he has nothing else. So it's kind of like a switch between this fantastic role and just reverting back to a human, even though that's what he was before. I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but it's an interesting, like, character switch that
it's allowing him to be more than his tagline. And you guys, I mean, I've said this 100 times, but I think one of the main reasons that Buffy sort of has earned my loyalty to the point it has is because it doesn't let things go. Like, it remembers its own history, and it lets its characters react like the characters would react, even when that's a bad reaction. Sometimes, hopefully, it's a good reaction, and it doesn't let the characters forget their own history. And I think this also says a lot about the actors. Like, the core actors do so much to show, even if they don't have any lines, even if the spotlight isn't on them, you can see them living their characters, and you can see them remembering something that happened, like, 2 seasons ago, because someone brought up something that reminded them of that. And this is obviously, like, a turning point, but it's also just an example of the show following through with things like that. And you brought up Jenny as well as something that isn't just a death that happened because they needed a death. It was legitimately something that has consequences for Giles, and is going to continue to have consequences for Giles and influence his decisions, even in small ways that we might not think about. And hearts in my eyes, guys. So anyway, there's a lot to talk about in this episode, actually. And one of them is Oz, who is first in the dock, mainly because of his amazing line about ice. That none of us picked as our favorite. I gave it to Natalie because someone had to have it. But I'll just say it here that, you know, he understands the value of a good ice capade. He goes, ice is water. No, ice is water. Ice is cool. It's water, but it's not. Oh, I laughed for like 10 minutes.
He's trying so hard.
Yes. Horrible. and what did you guys think when Buffy sort of tried? Because we've seen her sort of try to keep in touch with her dad and being super excited about her dad. And her dad obviously lets her down now for her 18th birthday. And so she goes to Giles because Giles can be her dad.
I don't want to talk about this because it was so painful to watch her try and ask him. And just to like know, I mean, we could see it. We talked about this 100 times on here, how Giles is a big paternal figure in her life. And to have him like just having her admit that out loud was like really like validating for me as a fan. And then to like watch him just ignore her, and it just hurt so much. Like it hurt less when her dad couldn't go, because I was like, that's par for the course. Like, you know, I get that she would be let down by her dad. I thought it would be a weird place for her dad to come back in at this point in the season anyway. So that happening, I was like, oh, okay. Like, that makes sense. She's going to be upset already about her birthday because nothing good can happen on Buffy's birthday. And then, you know, we'll deal with whatever catastrophe comes from there. But the catastrophe being that Giles was also going to let her down, and that be the theme of the episode laid so early, with her being let down by one dad, and then it was a whole paternal thing the rest of the episode. I was just like, why? Why are you doing this to me? I had to watch Jenny die and Giles grieve. Now I have to watch Giles get fired and be like, be Buffy be mad at him. I'm like, ah, it was too much.
Yeah, I just do love, as painful as it is, I do love that in this episode, like, we're bookended by basically getting confirmation that Buffy, well, at least at the beginning of the episode, who knows what she's feeling now, but at least at the beginning of the episode, she basically considers Giles like a stand-in dad. And at the end of the episode, obviously, we get confirmation that Giles has a father's love for the child. Oh, I can't even say it. And I love that is addressed in the show, because it's definitely one of my favorite relationships dynamics there. Oh, can you guys believe there's people that actually like ship these two characters? It's just so wrong.
No, absolutely.
So
not.
Mad. No.
The so relationship is too good as it is. Don't need anything more than
right.
that.
Right. It's so pure. So we also have a note in here from Ariana right above her all caps that, you know, Oz, going back to Oz, he is such a great human. Why are these tools basically forcing him to hang out with Xander, a.k.a. the guy who a couple of weeks ago was macking on this girl? Now, I don't know what you guys feel about this, but I sort of feel like that's more Oz's decision. Like, he knows that by forgiving Willow, he had to accept that Xander was always going to be a part of her life. He even said it, you know, Xander will have a part of you that I never can. His feelings for Willow basically force him to accept Xander. And then I think also Oz is just a chill guy. Like, if anyone could forgive someone for that, it's him.
Yeah, and I think also, not that he would maybe actively think this, but if he were to try to pull Willow away from that, or be like, no, I don't want to be anywhere near, that could backfire on him.
Definitely.
Like, I think he's smart enough to trust Willow, but I think also that might play a factor. Like, if that backfires, he would obviously choose Xander over him because of their history together, and I mean, because of what happened. So I think that's also smart on his part to just go with it and try to get back to something that's somewhat normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the thing. Like, you can't break up the Scoobies. Like, you can't try to come between the Scoobies. And as much as I think Willow would genuinely make an effort to choose Oz, I don't think she could. Like, I think because she couldn't choose Oz over Buffy. And if she can't go without Buffy, she also can't go without Xander, because they are in this together. Like, their mission of saving the world together basically overrides all of their personal problems. So I guess he has no choice, basically. And then, of course, we get to the scene where Giles begins enacting his Watcher's duty and injects her with the poisonous needles to take away her strength. And even though he does help her at the end and does help her defeat the super awful, horrible, nightmare-inducing vampire, it is a valid question. Will he and Buffy ever be able to get over it? You know, but will Buffy be able to forgive him for this? Trust him again?
I think she will be, but also there's always going to be that little seed of like, well, if someone who you think has a better idea tells you what to do, are you going to do that again? Mm-hmm. Because that, like, you know, I don't know. I think there's always going to be something keeping them apart, but also they are a great team. And I think that they recognize that they are stronger together. And I think that says something about Buffy as a Slayer. I don't think Buffy is the type of person who, yes, she's a strong individual and she can take care of herself. But I think she needs those people around her to help her, you know. At the end of the day, Buffy can go one-on-one against anything. I don't have a doubt in my mind about that. But I think that she needs that support system. And I think that Giles is a huge part of that. And I don't know if she'll be able to move on immediately without him there or at all, without knowing that he's at least behind the scenes somehow. Maybe not with her always, like in the library or whatever for the coming future. Like, you know, if he's not her watcher and she needs to deal with someone else coming in. But just knowing that, like, his mind and heart are kind of now in the right place and he recognizes what he did and will always have her back at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think she understands. Like, even though she might have a gut reaction of being betrayed, I think she understands. And when Quentin Travers said, you know, you have a father's love for the child. I think she heard it and I think she understood it. And I think, and it's not like they haven't overcome betrayals before, you know, like when she kept Angel from him. So going back to the Watchers Council here, which I'm so glad that they're finally on the screen and we have this Quentin Travers guy. Finally, we can talk about him because I think it's so interesting. And like I touched on earlier, basically the patriarchy coming down on this girl power show. Ariana describes him as creepy AF, which I think is fair. But she also asks, you know, do they have a point? Is this a good exercise? You know, and obviously the whole thing is when a Slayer turns 18, if she's made it to 18, which also indicates that a lot of Slayers don't, they make her go through this because she needs to be able to rely. Basically, she needs to have all the skills that Buffy already has. And if she can't, then she's not good enough to continue being a Slayer anyway. And then she just dies and another Slayer is called. And Ariana's sort of follow up to that is, would it be okay if she knew it was coming and could prepare? And there's sort of a whole issue of consent, making it all even more icky and horrible.
I had the same thing running through my mind because that's one of the things that this episode made me conflicted about is it a good exercise? And I think in theory it is. The way it's set up, it is not. But I think a happy medium would be to inform the Slayer that it was going on, but immediately before she takes these injections and maybe not have them as a series. So like she gets some warning about it, but what kind of training would you be able to do beforehand that would be different from your normal training that would give you an edge over the completely not knowing, you know, like what benefit is there to Buffy being like doubting herself so much? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It, like that just seems like a weird factor to have in there. And I'm not sure what the benefit of that would be.
Yeah. I feel my thoughts, like, I feel like I'm always comparing this show to the Hunger Games, but when it comes to like preparing Slayers for anything, but I think like you have that moment where you like, she doesn't know her whole life that she's, like, you know, is going to have to face this, but you know, in that like 2 week period before you're put into an arena that you're going to have to like fight for your life and you're unprepared and not skilled and you go through like different sorts of training. So it would be, but she's going to lose all of her strength. So she'd have to like, you know, have to think about things and practice like different types of maneuvers. But I think that could be one way to improve it, but also this test, I feel like these guys, because like you said, Selena, not many Slayers make it to 18, that these guys are on such a power trip that they were trying to make it as gruesome and brutal as possible. Yes, Giles probably would have had to do the same thing regardless of it being this big and whatever. But I feel like they're just on this like power trip, like, well, we can kill a Slayer because, like, you know, none of them ever make it this far and we want to see some action. So they're like the capital in the sense, like, we're going to make it as hard as possible because we don't get to see it that often, like, you know.
Yeah. And I also think that says a lot because they also, we already know that they don't like Giles. And we already know that they consider Buffy a rough Slayer. So for them, you know, saying, okay, well, if she has to make it through, she really has to earn it. And we also know, like, the vampire they chose, the crazy mother-killing one, like, that's not the norm. Mm-hmm. As far as such a things are the norm, like, the one they got for her was much worse than what they probably would have gotten for any other Slayer. And he also totally went off the book because I don't know if they were actually planning to tell her. Like, someone had to lead her into the house. It was never the point that he was kidnapping her mother. Like, I feel like they were going to lead her to the house and be like, we're going to shut you in here and you have to fight a vampire.
And like, if
but
it was,
that obviously didn't happen.
Yeah, and if it was, like, let's say Kendra, it just would have been par for the course. Like, this is a thing that happens. Mm-hmm. We're just going to send in a vampire. You're going to have to kill it. But because, like, they have this, like, you know, grudge against Giles and against Buffy from the start, it's more like President Snow on a power trip being like, no, I'm sending you back into the arena and it's going to be the worst experience of your life.
Yeah, which is a funny comparison because in the Buffy movie of 1992, Donald Sutherland actually played her watcher.
Oh, so that's funny.
There you go.
Oh, fun fact. I didn't know that either.
Oh, that movie's the worst, but it's also hilarious. We definitely need to watch that when we're done with the series. I think you're absolutely right, though. The Watchers Council is just on a huge power trip, and the fact that Buffy is acting as independently as she is, like, breaking with however many years of tradition, and they want to control her. She's their Slayer. She's not her own Slayer. She's not Giles' Slayer. And that's pretty much what's going on here. And you can see the joy on Quentin Travers' face when he got to fire Giles. That was almost like Snyder level of glee. And I don't think that was an accident. And obviously this whole thing with Buffy having to fight, you know, the overalls of sadness come back, which I appreciated because I always like when we see them make an appearance. And Buffy goes into the house, you know, the crazy vampire kidnaps Joyce and takes all those Polaroids, once again placing this show in time back when there were Polaroids before they made a resurgence.
But also keeping it modern with the best selfie I've ever seen in my life of the two of them. I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard. And like this like tragic, horrible episode, I paused that part because I thought it was so funny. Because his face is just so good.
But I mean, what do you guys think though about this whole, because I know, because obviously I watched this for the first time when I was much younger, so I thought, like, it's so dark and it's so scary, and I still can't watch it because I think it's so scary. But what did you think of that whole super horrific couple of scenes and how she finally takes him down? Like, did you see that coming? Were you surprised?
I
don't remember.
Yeah.
When she put the holy water in his glass.
I just can't remember if I was surprised. I feel like I knew something happened, like there was some sort of trick, but I was surprised with the holy water. I thought that was really smart. And yeah, like you said, this was dark and more joyless than usual. Because even when there are awful things happening, she's cracking jokes or there's some sort of witty banter going on. In this, there was nothing. It was almost like a horror movie where she was running for her life the whole time. So there was definitely a different atmosphere that was interesting to see in this show.
And she even says that. She's like, if I was at full strength, I'd be punning right about now.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It was like, she even like makes a point being like, I'm not myself right now, but I'm enough of myself to know that I can defeat you regardless. And I thought it was, I kind of knew that she would have something, you know, up her, I want to say up her sleeve, but I was trying to think of an overall pocket joke, but I couldn't, that, like, you know, she would figure something, some way to defeat him. And I didn't see the holy water coming. I thought that was genius. And it just made the pill thing make more sense, where he was accepting water and stuff like that. So I was like, ah, this show, so smart.
Yes, so smart. And so, oh, but yeah, so scary, so joyless, so horror movie-like. And you get such a good appreciation for Buffy at her usual Slayer self, because this was just really miserable. Like, if this was the show all the time, like, that would just be awful. Another thing that Ariana brings up and that we should definitely talk a little bit about is that Cordelia, she's really on fire. Like, both this episode and last episode, Cordelia gets to be the hero. And this, obviously, she gets to be the human hero to Buffy. Like, that scene in the library, which I know none of us have as our favorite quote or scene, but it was still very, very powerful when Buffy finds out what Giles did, and she's heartbroken. She's betrayed, and Cordelia comes in and she's like, oh, whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the minute Buffy just goes, can you take her home, me home, Cordelia just, like, yeah, of course, okay, I'll do it. Yeah, like, there's no, the way she says that says so much about Cordelia, you know? And I just love her so much, especially in this season.
Yeah, I like that they're not making, they did for a little bit, like, not making the whole thing about her and Xander. It's like, there's still that little bit of, we've been through all of this stuff together, blind loyalty, to where, like, yeah, you don't need to explain anything to me, I'll just take you home. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like, she has that sense of, like, okay, now's not the time for questions, but I'm still going to need a note if I miss this paper.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think, and such a good contrast too, because I think Cordelia, like, we saw it too in what was it, Homecoming, that Cordelia sort of proves that you don't need to be a Slayer to be a hero. You know, you don't even need to be a witch or to have super strength or whatever, you know. It's basically making Xander look even worse because, you know, she's so good. And poor Xander just has nothing going for him. So really, really good show for Cordy. And then we come to the end of the episode and Giles is fired. And we kind of already talked about that, so I don't know. And we have it in quotes too, so let's just shelve that for now and just talk about Ariana's final point here, which is that, ugh, Angel loves Buffy because of her heart that he could see the first time he met her, obviously. And I would agree with the ugh, except for Buffy's response, because obviously Angel goes on this long thing, I could see your heart, you held it before you for everyone to see, and I wanted to keep it safe and warm it with my own. And Buffy's just like, that's beautiful, or taken literally, incredibly gross. And Angel's like, yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. I think this is just one of the show's ways of sort of being like, yeah, we are aware that this is, like, beyond cheesy.
Yeah,
to the point of ridiculous.
I really appreciated that, because the whole time that he was saying it, I'm like, oh my God, I have to turn this episode off. This is awful. Right. I don't want to watch any more of this. And then they're like, and then I think that Angel's reaction to Buffy being like, that's could be incredibly gross. And he's like, oh yeah. And, like, knew it as I was saying it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No. So, and I actually tuned out during that speech slightly. I was like, oh, this is slightly mushy. And then all of a sudden I heard them, like, crack that at the end. I was like, oh good. Maybe I should rewind and listen to that again. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated it.
Yeah, I did too, and I think that's why they sort of got to make it as cheesy as that. And I know that David Fury wrote this episode, just a little note, it was the second episode he wrote for Buffy, and he went on to write 12 episodes of Angel, the series. And I think, you know, you sort of see he's very well connected to the limits they can take Angel to in terms of how super cheesy it can go and how they sort of have to then reel it back, which I like. I appreciated that. So I will say yes to the ugh, but also it was okay because of what they did after. So moving on to our favorite scenes, I mean, I think we should just sort of combine mine and Brittany's, because I know that I pointed to the one with the final scene where, you know, Giles is fired and Quentin Travers leaves and Buffy's like, bite me. And they just sit there and look at each other, and he goes to her and and you know, and waters the thing, and you know, dabs at her blood, and has that incredibly what is it called, like that look in his eyes that is just, he's sorry and he's careful and he loves her like a daughter, basically.
God, it hurt so much.
It does. And that kind of leads to your point, which isn't really a scene, just a general statement.
Yeah, I when I came in for favorite scenes, I was like, I said nothing. This episode made Giles a bad man.
Yeah.
I just couldn't, like, there were, like, a few kernels of, like, funny things. Like, when Cordelia is not reading the room when she first comes in, I guess, is a good one. And she's just like, I have a paper to write. Like, where's the books on this? And, like, they're clearly in the middle of this fallout. And
yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's fine.
So do you agree with that, Danielle, that nothing in this episode made him a bad man?
I think so. I think he's just flawed, or he's trying to do the best that he can. And sometimes, in the eternal words of Peggy Carter, sometimes the best we can do is to start over.
Oh, yeah, so bring Peggy into this. Now I'm even more upset. I do.
Every part of my life, Peg is always going to be there. So he's flawed, and he recognizes that he's flawed, and he's just doing the best that he can to appease the council, but also protect Buffy. And when that doesn't work, he has to find a new way. And so this episode is him getting to that point where he has to start finding a new way. So I don't think anything in this episode makes him a bad man, because there are much worse people out there that don't have the intentions that he does. Mm.
Yeah. He is helpless. They really, really, I was thinking that as you were talking, like, he is as helpless at the beginning of this episode as Buffy. It's like, he feels like he has no choice. He feels like he has to do his job, because that's how it's always been done. And it's really only when he sees the reality of what he did that he realizes that he does have a choice.
Yeah, and actually, you know,
consequences be damned.
This made me think of, real quick, small tangent, that when he was, yes, it was funny in the moment, but the more I think about it, it's not as funny, was when Giles was so preoccupied with the Watchers Council, like, not including him in their trip. I feel like that is such a small seed that they planted in the beginning, where he is very focused on what the Watchers Council thinks of him, and this episode is just like, well, this is what they're expecting of me. I must live up to expectations, because he is, like, yes, he's concerned with Buffy first, but there's that bigger thing in the background being like, these people rely on me and I need to make a good impression. They're not inviting me places because I'm not doing a good job, maybe, so I have to do a good job here. And I think that was, now, like, it's not as funny anymore because it was leading to this. So this show is doing a really good job with Giles and Buffy's relationship.
So good. Such a good job. Oh, so much, so much love. What was your favorite scene, Danielle? Speaking of something else that did well.
Oh my goodness. Well, I feel like this is completely different, but my favorite scene was the very end, like, when it cuts to the credits end, where Buffy is trying to open a jar of peanut butter and can't because she's still trying to regain her strength. So Xander offers to do it for her, but also fails at it and then tries to make excuses.
Yes.
So something completely different from what we've been talking about for the rest of the episode. The only really light moment was my favorite moment.
Equally great, you know, equally good. Also because of the quiet little commentary, you know, Xander, it just isn't anything compared to these girls.
Right.
You know, for better or worse, like, he can't even open a jar of peanut butter. And
the fact that he, like, asks Willow to do it. Like, not even Oz, who is also standing there.
Girl power! Woo! Awesome. And then favorite lines. Okay, I'm just going to go back to the whole Giles and Buffy thing one last time. Quentin Travers's direct quote is, "Your affection for your charge has rendered you incapable of clear and impartial judgment. You have a father's love for the child, and that is useless to the cause." In one quote, we sum up, like, what the Watchers Council is all about and what Buffy and Giles's relationship is all about. And, amazing, amazing. The Watchers Council, so many thoughts that I can't say. but plenty I can, as evidenced by this very long podcast episode. Brittany?
Mine was probably the most heartbreaking quote of the entire episode, which is where Buffy, like, Giles goes to try to explain and, like, you know, he, like, reaches out to, like, put his hand on her arm, and she's just like, if you touch me, I'll kill you. And I was like, right. Oh, my gosh.
Right. This is, like, the one person that could never betray her, mm-hmm. basically. You know, the one person she thought always had her back. And amazing. Let's end on a happy quote.
It's what I'm here for.
Yep.
So mine comes when Cordelia interrupts their moment in the library. She says, but if the world doesn't end, I'm going to need a note. Because she's not able to do her research and write her paper.
Yep. Amazing. So that's the end of our two episodes, Gingerbread and Helpless. And it was a fun discussion. And we know you guys have some stuff to say as well. So before we move on into listener feedback, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com. And you can find us on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will be so into you. She is so into you. I bet that's true. I'm sure that's a reference to something.
It's also a line. It's a line from Helpless.
Oh, I should have seen that coming. Okay. Well, I fail at quoting that, but whatever. I did my best. Listener feedback. We have a couple of tweets, and Ariana and, no, she's not here. Danielle and Brittany, if you guys want to go back and forth.
Sure. I'll start. So we have Hannah Long at HannahLong831, who said, really loved this week's thoughtful and poignant commentary, especially from Caitlin. #soulcondom.
Oh, that made my life. Best comment ever.
And then this one is from Tanisha, and she's at Saf. She says, was watching Buffy and turned it off to finish reading, only to have my cat meow protest until I turned it back on. Amazing. Way to go, cat.
Your cat has good taste. Brilliant.
And then we have Claire Tetty at Claire_Tetty, who said, gotta love Bunny Summers with a little cute bunny emoticon.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about that. Willow's mom thinks her name is Bunny.
Adorable. And we also have another tweet. This one's from Mandy Kay. And she says, I can't wait for Mitch to watch Angel. And I kind of feel like the rest of us feel the same way.
Yeah.
Just because he brings up the show all the time.
I know.
And he is not. Has he seen Angel?
No.
No. He just knows it exists. And so he tries to, because I don't get on here very much, so I'm always listening. And from what it sounds like, it's like everything that happens in the show, he just thinks about how it's going to affect Angel, which is really entertaining. And I love him for it.
Yes, I do too. Also, because it is like I see like the things sometimes like someone will hit upon, like obviously something that's like a good theory, a right theory, and I'm just thinking, but he makes theories about Angel like literally all the time. So some of them are going to be right, and some of them are not. And I'm just very excited when he finally sees what the show actually is. He's going to be super disappointed after all those amazing theories he's come up with. But yeah, so we're also very excited to start watching Angel. And our final comment comes from Hyperbole. It's from Kat. She says, as someone who has relatively recently watched season 4 with fresh eyes, I have to agree with Selena. It's not my favorite season or anything, but there's a lot of episodes I like in season 4, and there's even a few that I love. I would say that newbies should try to go into it with an open mind. It has a bit of a reputation, but it's still very much worth watching. I agree. Season 4 is far from my least favorite season, and I don't dislike any of the seasons, except kind of season 1, because it's season 1. But yeah, no, I agree. I definitely agree. Obviously, it's hard to go into anything without a little bit of pre-expectation from the super fans, I think. But I would definitely say, because when every person who watches Buffy is going to have a favorite and a least favorite. Like, the seasons are going to be in different order because they are so different. So I'm excited to see what people think of season four. I'm always pleasantly surprised when I watch it. And that's everything for this episode. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Danielle for joining us again. We're so glad to have you on. And next week, I believe the two episodes are the Zeppo and the one that comes after the Zeppo. I'm just looking it up right now. The Zeppo and Bad Girls. So another couple of episodes that I'm super sad to skip, Karen. But whatever. Until next time, my name is Selena.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Danielle.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.